Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest, 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. He joins us on Mondays, but I was out yesterday, so he agreed to join us today, and we appreciate that. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, happy to do it. Good to be with you today.
So, Guy, economic changes now with the new administration. Things are moving so quickly, so fast, and a lot of different things happening. It's really hard to keep track of it all.
Yeah, it really is. And I think this is one of the differences between Trump 1 and Trump 2. First time around, I don't think he really expected to win. If you remember, all the polls showed that he was going to lose. I think at that point, if you could inject truth serum, he would have said, I'm just doing this to enhance my brand and to help my TV show and the value of the Trump properties. And then, shockingly, he won. And if you remember time 1, probably 2 weeks was wasted with just foolishness about, well, was the crowd bigger for his inauguration or President Obama's? When anybody who looked at the video would realize, look, President Obama, that was a historic moment. It was a bigger crowd. It just was. But he got into that foolishness and got distracted. This time around, there is a sense of urgency, and the lady he has as chief of staff is apparently keeping things on track. And they're flooding the zone with projects, proposals, presidential orders. And it really is an amazing display of order. If you're on Team R, you got to say, wow, this is what we voted for. If you're on Team D, it's like you feel like you're getting pummeled because, you know, he's coming so fast in so many ways. In fact, some of the commentators even said, we don't even know what to cover because so much is going on so quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I get that same sense as just a consumer of a lot of news like you. I'm not sure where they fall in priority any longer either.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, we have today new news pausing all federal grants and loans. Now, a lot of those loans were in the Inflation Reduction Act, the Green New Deal, and there's some good arguments that most of those weren't economically efficient, but you know, some grants are for essential research, so you don't really know where that's going, but it's an actual pause, not a cancellation. So today at 5 p.m., that's over. Not dispersing any money, and of course there'll be court challenges, but that's something that probably no one expected, but it's a sort of rapid response that you know, he said he was going to do, you know, for the state of Louisiana, really focusing hard, repealing the Biden ban on offshore drilling, expanding LNG exports, removing the ban on LNG export terminals, and then the one hand gives, the other takes away, freezing offshore wind leases. So, you know, we're sort of poised to be one of the big producers in offshore wind. Well, it looks like that's going to be on hold. You know, freezing hiring in the government. You know, we probably have more government employees than we need, but you have to be careful. Some are absolutely essential. We do need a bunch of government employees, and a bunch of them do a good job. But he's frozen employment and then laid off a group. You know, suspended the admission portal for people overseas coming to the U.S. as immigrants. Other things that sort of make sense, and you wonder, you know, probably you as a former policeman, why we didn't do this all along, collecting DNA and fingerprints of immigrants. Well, that makes sense. You have a database, and then if somebody does become a criminal, you know right away who they are. But that started. And then TikTok, he used to be opposed to it. Now he's giving them 75 days. Perhaps a deal will be cut. Not really sure. And then if you're in Alaska, you got to feel pretty good. It's, you know, for a while, it was almost as if the federal government was at war with Alaska, because every development they tried to do was banned, stopped, suspended. So he's reversed all that. The roads to the essential minerals are going to be allowed to be built. Drilling will be allowed. Some of the designations of national monuments are removed so that there can be logging, can be hunting and fishing. And then, of course, we get back to climate, Paris Accords, dropping out of that. And, you know, he did this once before. This shouldn't be a surprise. In theory, it takes a year to drop out of it, but when you're the government and you choose not to follow it, it's effectively dead right now. And I think this is important because, you know, there was a chance in the Obama administration when this could have been brought to the Senate for confirmation, and it probably would have been ratified. But now, without it being ratified, any president can either instate it or uninstate it, and he's chosen to drop out of that. So an awful lot in a lot of different areas. We can debate the economic merits of it, but he is following through on the campaign promises that he made.
And then we get to the comments by the Fed Reserve. They seem to be shifting directions a little bit again.
Yeah, Federal Reserve is really on hold right now. And what they're saying is the economy is stronger than we thought. And you and I have talked about this before. The most unsurprising statement ever is Federal Reserve officials were surprised by fill in the blank, you know, increased employment, increased hiring, you know, whatever it is, rising inflation. They don't seem to be particularly good at predicting the future, which I guess is understandable. I remember that one of the commentators said economics was invented so that astrologers would look better. And I thought, well, that's a little strong. But Fed now is saying, look, we're data dependent. We're just going to wait. We're not likely to reduce rates. And then some of the Fed members in their private talks, when they go around the country, have said, you know, there's a chance we may raise rates. And if you're a mortgage lender like we are, we're not really thrilled about that prospect. And President Trump's not thrilled. He's a real estate developer, and real estate developers are always looking for lower rates. But the Fed at this moment is saying, you know, there's a chance that we may have to raise rates, but for sure we're not lowering them right now.
There was this thought process that there was going to be one, possibly two rate reductions this year. So when there's that thought process, you and I have talked about this, how the market kind of follows that and, you know, and moves different things in different directions. What happens now with their most recent messaging?
Well, what happens is there's a tool that people look at, CME Rate Watch, and it predicts the likelihood of Fed increases, Fed decreases. And right now it is predicting that there may only be one this year. And The problem, of course, with any tool is that it's not always right, but it's sort of directionally accurate. People are beginning to project. A few people are saying there might be rate increases this year, and this is tough, particularly for our mortgage business. Last year was the worst year ever for worst year in 20 years for the mortgage business. So a tough time to get mortgage loans. It doesn't look like mortgage rates are going to drop this year, or if they do, they won't drop by a substantial amount. So that's something that's concerning. And look, every administration wants a strong mortgage business. It doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on. You want to see home builders do well, people buying houses and moving in, and have home building and home buying be pretty much affordable.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. And again, things are moving so fast. I have to imagine that people are just having difficulty consuming all of this information.
Well, they really are. And, you know, getting back to your question, the economists are still projecting two rates, but they've moved it all the way back to the end of the year, which means, well, you know, later on we'll maybe move one into next year. But we really don't know, and I think you could make a strong case for either one rate reduction or flat. And look, Jamie Dimon, who sees things both ways, said, you know, we're balancing the bank so that if rates go up, we're okay, and if rates go down, we're okay. And that's the way we run our business. We're not trying to make an interest rate bet, but this is the first time he's talked about, well, we need to be positioned for rate increases as well.
Yeah, it will be really interesting to see how this plays out. And again, not to beat a dead horse, but I don't remember times where, and I guess you have this with every new administration, but maybe not to this degree, such a broad just shift in just a very short period of time.
Yeah, I think this time, you know, because of the turmoil, because of the fact that, you know, President Trump was out for 4 years and is now back, you know, he really had a long time to plan, okay, what if? You know, if I get back in, what am I going to do? And then you're also, day one, you're a lame duck. So you can't run again. And so the thought process on his side is, look, everything I need to do within the first 2 years, because traditionally at midterms, whoever's the president loses seats. And we know with a thin House majority, there's just very, very little room for that. If he wants to continue to hold both sides of the congressional aisle. So there's a lot of energy, a lot of focus. His team is much more focused than they were last time. He's built it out much more quickly. He's got his cabinet people appointed much more quickly. And it's interesting, some of the things he talked about doing day one, he didn't do. He did not impose tariffs day one. And that was something that had been in the discussion. Did not end the Ukraine war on day one. But I think both of those are issues that his economic people have said, look, we need to put a little pause here. If we abandon Ukraine, that could be a real challenge in the years to come. It'll be much more expensive to fight the next war with Russia if we let Ukraine lose this one. And the same thing on tariffs. So let's use those as a negotiating ploy. But if you impose them day one, you can't reimpose. You've already shot the shotgun.
Yeah, that's really true. And again, not to beat that dead horse, but as you just pointed out, this funding freeze on federal grants that was just released, and there was just another alert that just came out. They're just one after the other, and you're like, wait a second. We just finished reading one, and now there are more. It truly is going to be interesting where this all ends up in a very short period of time, because a lot of this, as you said, are pauses, right? So what is the real rule going to be coming back? And just, is it going to be 30 days, 40 days, 50 days, what? You know, and then you have everything going on with all the other with all the agencies as well.
And I think there is some rationality to doing a pause. Whatever administration's come in, let's look and see what's really working. Let's see what is just a waste, and then we'll go forward. you know, the Biden administration and the Obama administration both reviewed environmental policies and climate change policies and found that 90+% of them weren't doing anything positive to reduce global emissions. So this was an internal study that they did, and it would have been good to say, let's pause the ones that don't work and only do the ones that do work and, you know, sort of restate. And for the sake of the country, I think we all want America to do well. I'm hoping there'll be a good rational reassessment, and then you refund the things that, that actually are working.
Yeah, that's certainly, I think that's what most people are hoping for. No, I am. You know, to have some kind of meaningful response to a lot of the stuff that we saw that just didn't seem to make common sense. You know, it didn't seem to be a commonsensical approach to what we were trying to do. Not that everything that happened under the Biden administration was bad, but some of the things that were, it's one thing to say, okay, we're going to stop that, but how do we move forward? Because a lot of this needs to be dealt with in a very reasonable and rational way. When we return, we got to get to a break. We'll talk about a new fraud that's targeting app recipients, as well as beneficial ownership requirements are paused and more. So stay with us.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. With our biggest sale ever, furnaces from $39 a month, furnace and air conditioning combos from $59 a month, plus 72 months interest-free financing and up to a $4,000 system rebate. Four Seasons guaranteed to beat any competitor's price by up to $1,000 guaranteed. So call today for your free in-home estimate and same-day installation.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to 4 different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball at Guy Williams because I want to make sure that we have enough time to talk about this. This DeepSeek revelation with the Chinese AI firm. Folks, Guy, are saying that this is potentially a Sputnik moment. And for those of you that don't know what that term is used, it's a term that's used to describe that, you know, a country needs to catch up to another country's technological development because it seems to be further along or further advanced than what your country is doing. Is that the case here?
It might be. You know, it's an interesting case study. There's a company in China, and it's called DeepSeek. It's a small company, and it's run by a man called Ling Wenfeng. And what he decided is, okay, if the U.S. is going to block the sale of high-tech chips to China, let me see if there's a way to develop artificial intelligence using different computer programming and more efficiency. And it really goes to one of the challenges in IT, which is, if you have lots of memory and lots of storage, it's easy to write sloppy code. And so coders don't worry about it because they've got lots of memory, lots of horsepower, and they don't worry about making their code very, very efficient. Well, China and Ling said, because we can't get these super fast NVIDIA chips, we're going to need to work around that. And what he did is he developed an artificial intelligence program, and whereas Meta uses 1.3 million chips to work on their artificial intelligence, he uses 10,000. So it's a generational quantum leap in efficiency, and it really is a Sputnik moment. And what he said when people asked him, so, well, how did you do this? He said, I hired inexperienced people. I wanted people that had only been out of school a couple of years, because people that are very experienced get stuck in their ways. They're not open to innovation, and they don't think it can be done. Young people that are fresh in the business don't realize that what I'm asking is impossible. And so he hired basically a relatively inexperienced workforce, created an open source AI program, and really turned the industry on its head. I mean, it may not be that you need all these NVIDIA chips to do artificial intelligence, but the other thing you may not need are the giant data centers like the one that's being built in Louisiana. So if you can write efficient code and you can do it with far fewer chips, it's going to really change the nature of this business. But it's critically important because this is something where the U.S. was well in the lead. We thought we had a super lead. You know, we had the Googles, the Alphabets, the Metas, Oracles, all pumping billions into this. And it seemed like we were well ahead of the rest of the world. And it was going to be an area where we were just going to dominate. And suddenly, the Chinese come up with a simple solution. And it's very reminiscent of our social media, where, you know, we were the first movers. We had Facebook first. We had all of the different American social media. And then a company called ByteDance invented TikTok, which was effectively an addictive algorithm and gained tremendous market share. And the scary thing, if you're an American IT, is his version, their AI version, which they call R1, is ranked number 3 behind the ones that have spent billions, but it's free. It's a free product, so it's the most downloaded app on the App Store. And before people rush out to download it, important to know that if you're downloading a Chinese app, the Chinese government always has access to anything you supply them. That's one of the rules in Chinese IT, that they have absolutely open access, and the Chinese government does control this and any other app that's written in China. And if you wonder about that, for people that have downloaded the app, if you ask about Tiananmen Square or the Hong Kong protest or militarizing the South China Sea, the app will say, well, that's beyond my scope. I can't answer that. So a revolutionary change. And go ahead.
I was going to say, this is going to sound stupid because it probably is a stupid question. So we know that the end product puts something out, right? It's producing something. Do we really know all the internal machinations of this technology that they're bragging about?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it is open source, so you can look at the code, and I guarantee you the people in Silicon Valley and all the different tech areas, including NSA, are scouring the code, trying to figure out what's what. There is a lot of supposition that what they've done is they used AI to create AI and looked at the American AI programs and helped them write this AI program and used a different sort of logic. It's more, instead of reading every book in the library, it's finding the one or two books that are actually more on point. So it goes a different approach, and it also, they call it muddling. Well, it'll come to a stop, and then it'll think through, well, maybe this or maybe that, and then it'll come back a different way. But whatever he's done, whether they're stealing AI and using AI to create their own program, in the measure of success, this is ranked number 3 in the world. So, you know, you're ahead of, X, Elon Musk AI program. You're really only behind Google and ChatGPT, the Microsoft product. But, it's an incredible invention. And it certainly is a wake-up call to the industry that, look, there may be a different way to write this code. And back to the internal machinations, we don't know how the government puts in the anti-free speech part. But clearly, if you ask a sensitive question like, is President Xi doing a good job, it'll never give you an answer that's accurate. It won't talk about China's support for Russia, China's abuse of the Uyghurs. All those things are off limits to it. So it's definitely censored. It's definitely efficient. And it is a game changer because if they've done it for as little money as they say, with as few chips as they say, it really does change the nature of what you need to do AI.
So what happens to investment strategy in AI now? I mean, this like is a complete disruptor, right?
Yeah. NVIDIA, and let's go back a little bit. NVIDIA is a wonderful company. But NVIDIA, their claim to fame is they developed a super fast chip for the gaming industry, and not gaming as in gambling, but gaming as in computer games. The multi-person games, the shooter games, the travel games, because they needed something that would very quickly do scenery, backgrounds, action figures, and that consumed a lot of horsepower. Well, NVIDIA came up with some really great chips that were used in game consoles, and then people like Meta, like Google, realized, wait, we could use these chips to do internal language models where it learns by doing. And so they took these game chips and started using them for artificial intelligence, and really a whole industry was created. I mean, if you think about it, a few years ago, nobody was talking about artificial intelligence. No. And then it became a multi-billion-dollar business. NVIDIA skyrocketed. We banned the chips from being sold to China. And then the Chinese said, well, we're going to work around this a couple of ways. One, we're going to sneak chips in. Two, we're going to do computing offshore using NVIDIA chips. And then three, we're going to push our guys to work around the NVIDIA chips and see if we can find a way to not need them. And that's one of the dangers of trying to prohibit exports to a country like China, because it gives them a tremendous incentive to try and find a way to work around what you're doing. And I mean, credit to them. He came up with a cute little whale symbol, a nice user interface, and it really is what the IT guys like to call a disruptive technology.
But what's interesting is, I mean, how long has he been working on this technology? Do we know?
Well, he's a young man. No, he's not even 30 years old, so it has to have been just a few years. It looks like 3 or 4 years.
So,
and
I mean,
what he said is, look, I've just hired kids to work with me and made this happen.
It's pretty incredible. I mean, when you talk about the disruptive force of what he's able to do, I mean, when you monetize this, you're talking about, I mean, it blows the competition away. They can't compete, unless
they... Yeah, because right now it's free. It's hard to compete with free.
No, that's
so
for sure.
It is as good as the paid ChatGPT version, but it doesn't cost anything. And we don't know yet. I mean, it is literally brand new. We don't know if it has the hallucinations that some of the other AI programs have. And by that, I mean where it just makes up stuff. Because some of AI will just make up answers. And has he resolved that? If he's resolved that, that would really be a breakthrough.
Pretty incredible. Everything else that we talked about, and then this breaking news. This friction between us and China, I don't believe in coincidences. I think, you know, that this was strategically released at this time. For what reason, I hadn't figured out yet. I'm sure there are other people that are trying to figure that out as we speak, right?
No, I agree with you. I think it's the timing is not coincidental. You're in, the second week of the Trump presidency. He's made a lot of comments about China, and all of a sudden China says, oh, by the way, look at what we did.
Yeah.
It could be a negotiating ploy for ByteDance and other tariff issues. Who knows? But it's definitely revolutionizing IT and AI and making people relook at the future of these chip manufacturers.
Yeah, for sure. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about that fraud targeting app and beneficial ownership requirements are paused as well and what that means. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, the fraudsters never relax. They never take a day off. What's the new fraud scheme going around?
Really, an additional tragic, unfortunate fraud. So I'm normally in favor of government transparency, but the crooks are also in favor of it. So PPP came along. Banks made PPP loans to companies that were in distress during COVID, and the government decided it would be a good idea to create a searchable database. So you can go on to the government database, and you can find any company in your state, any company in America that got a PPP loan. But the thing that I wish they had not included is they also included who the lender was. And so the crook said, you know, this is interesting. So now we have companies, we have names, and we have their bank. And so what the crooks have done is they've gone to the database, gotten company names, gotten bank names, and then they send the company either a text message or an email, or a phone call, and say, we're just calling, this is your security and fraud department from your bank. And it is, it's the right bank, because they know from the database who you bank with. And we're just trying to verify, did you try and access your online banking from a Galaxy S9 in Florida this week? Well, of course, people see that and say, no, of course I didn't. I wasn't in Florida, I'm right here. I don't even have a Galaxy X9. I've got an Apple phone. So they click on the link and say no, and then a very capable fraudster gets on the line and says, I'm from the fraud department at your bank. We need to ask a few questions just so we can verify this and weed out the attempted fraud. And what they do then is ingratiate themselves with the company. They say that they're from their bank. They seem very personable. And they said, look, you know, we just need to get the login information so we can freeze the crooks out. And in many, many cases, they have been able to talk people into giving them the login and password into their account because they think they're speaking to the bank. And then, of course, the crooks do what crooks always do. They link that information to other bank accounts. They wire money out. They steal money. And it has just broken out all over America because it works so well. And it works well because you're not suspicious, because wherever you bank, whether, you know, big bank, little bank, community bank, they know that you're who your bank is. They know your company name. They know your PPP amount. And so they can be very sincere and very compelling. And it's just an unfortunate result of us putting this information out in a searchable database.
In some sense, the PPP loan, it seems like it was forever ago, but it really wasn't, right? It was just not too many years ago.
No, it wasn't. And most people still bank with the same bank, and it's really, it's nothing to do with PPP. It's just, gives them the info they need to convince you that you're talking to your own bank. And one of the things, and I don't understand how this works, but you can spoof caller ID. So it looks like Bank of America calling or Chase calling or, heaven help us, Gulf Coast Bank call. And it's not.
Yeah.
And
you just have to be on guard for sure. Don't answer questions.
Yeah, don't do it and say, look, you know, I love you, but you know what? I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call the bank directly. And you call from the bank's website. You call a branch that you know and you say, look, I got this call. What's going on? And what they'll tell you is everybody's getting that call. The crooks move from thing to thing and this is working right now. So this is an active fraud right this minute that people need to be very aware of. And just note, your bank is not going to ever ask you for your login info, not any bank, not ours, not any bank anywhere. So you don't want to ever give up your login and password to anyone on the phone. None of the bank fraud departments will ever ask you for that.
Let's pivot to one other issue. Beneficial ownership requirements are now paused. You and I talked about this a couple of times. Tell us about it.
Yeah, this is a new requirement. Anybody who starts an LLC or a small company has to provide the government with name, address, home address, company name, social security number, and picture ID. And when I hear that list of info, I think, oh my goodness, that is all you need for identity theft. And we know, and you and I've talked about it before, many government agencies, including the Treasury, including FDIC, have been hacked. And if this information is available and is required from all the business owners, it will be the next fraud that you and I will be talking about, because the fraudsters will have everything they need. They'll have a picture ID. They'll have the social security number. And I do not believe that this will really help prevent money laundering. This is one of those things where I'm on the Trump, let's deregulate things a little bit and put a pause on this. Now, the courts have paused this. The administration hasn't weighed in. I hope that they're opposed to this proposal, but I just don't think beneficial ownership is a good idea, and particularly it's not a good idea to have a database with all that sensitive info when, I mean, heaven help us, we know that the government can't keep a secret. I love America. I would not want to be anywhere else, but our federal government would have a hard time hiding a chocolate rabbit from a two-year-old.
But you know as well as I mean, if you're really in a money laundering scheme, they have lawyers, they review the law, so they set up 5% ownership interest that don't require any of this, right?
Exactly.
You know,
and you use fake names, or the other thing that they do all the time that we see constantly is you'll pay a mule. Mm-hmm. And by a mule, you just mean an innocent person that you give some money and say, look, I'm going to give you $100 to borrow your driver's license or your state ID. And if you're a homeless person, an unemployed person, or someone with a real financial need, okay, fine, who cares? And so I don't think this is going to do what they want it to do. But for the people, the honest people that will comply, I think it provides a big avenue to fraud. Just like we saw PPP, I mean, that was a great, well-designed program, but this database opened up fraud. And yeah, I think beneficial ownership, if it's implemented, will do the same thing.
Yeah, for sure. Well, as always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. We covered a lot of material today, and we thank you for same. Have a great week.
Oh, you too. Good to see you.
That's Guy Williams, folks, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We will be right back. Scoot's up next. We'll check in with him. Stay with us. Award-winning comedian Bert Kreischer is bringing his mega comedy show Shirts vs. Skins to New Orleans, and WWL has your tickets. You've seen his shirtless comedy specials on Netflix, and now Bert Kreischer is bringing his big-time comedy event with big-time comedians, including Nikki Glaser, to UNO Lakefront Arena. It's the night before the big game, Saturday, February 8th. Register now to win your pair of tickets at WWL.com/contest today. And folks, as we gear up for Super Bowl 59, you can join WWL for an exclusive 3-hour feature show celebrating the reimagined Pro Bowl games live from Orlando, Florida, Sunday afternoon from 2 to 5 p.m. And we'll bring you unparalleled access to NFL stars and legends. Scoot joins us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
All right, which would you rather find, true love or have your team win the Super Bowl? Tough question.
How much do you have on the game?
It should. Yeah, nobody's bitten on marriages these days, that's for sure. Yeah, so we're going to answer that question. A recent survey shows that more people, especially Detroit Lions fans, would rather have a Super Bowl victory than find true love. So we'll talk about that.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way with a great lineup, folks. Stay tuned. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Tuesday evening. We'll see you again in the morning.